This series that we're doing, we may be picking it up again in the autumn, I'm not quite sure yet, but possible, yeah. But we're leaving it on a bit of a sort of a bit of a predicament, as we'll see as we get to the end of the verse 6 in chapter 3, a bit of a predicament, where things look like they're pretty hopeless, and we'll remind ourselves in a few minutes' time that they aren't hopeless at all, but it's appeared that way. We've been doing the book of John in our house group with Nir and Owen. And every week, Owen sort of said to the group, those Pharisees are at it again. This constant challenging of Jesus. It's sort of, we're only into chapter 2 of Mark, and already there's been a couple of challenges from the Pharisees. So I guess it would only be a matter of time before the Pharisees, who were the teachers of the law, and Jesus, who's the Son of God, only be a matter of time before they would come into a direct confrontation. And the Pharisees, if we use the word hated Jesus, well, we're not really exaggerating. They didn't like him at all. His teachings and his growing popularity, it threatened their religious authority. It threatened their status. And it also threatened their traditional interpretation of the law. And so in these first two chapters of Mark, and I'm sure Mike covered a bit of this last week, there's evidence of a growing confrontation. And by verse 6 of chapter 3, the questioning starts to lead to something a lot more sinister. So far in the Gospel of Mark, the Pharisees have questioned Jesus for publicly forgiving a sinner. Who can forgive sins but God alone? And then they're not happy with Jesus because he's eating with those that they saw as sinners, tax collectors, the rough end of the market, so to speak. Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? And so their mindset is, somehow we've got to catch him out. Somehow we've got to catch him out. That's their motive. If only they knew that with Christ as freedom, if only they knew that there's eternal life with the Lord, if only they knew that he loves us and has compassion on everybody and doesn't judge people. So in today's passage, they shift their critical focus to the Jewish law. Could they prove that Jesus was a lawkeeper, or hopefully could they prove that he was a law breaker? So we're going to read the whole thing through, and I'm going to leap upon you and just say this, you four, if you don't mind, just read the first bit, and then this slide will do the chapter 3 bit when we get to that bit. Is that okay? Here we go. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through... Yes, please, yeah. Yes, I'd just love to hear your voice. Off you go, go on. You four. Amen. Wasn't that red lovely? Oh, wasn't that good? No. We'll come to your bit in a moment, if that's okay, when we get to chapter 3. So the first thing I just wanted to, the point I wanted to make was entitled, A Legalism That Binds. I don't know whether you've ever met legalistic people, but a legalism that binds. So we pick up the story, and Jesus and his disciples, they're on the way to the synagogue. For Sabbath. What day was the Sabbath in the Jewish culture? Saturday. And to get there, they're either crossing through or crossing by some cornfields, and the corn was ripe for harvest. And I don't know whether you like corn, but when it's ripe, oh my goodness, it's amazing, isn't it? Especially when you just bite into the cob. And I love it, yeah. Maybe they've not had any breakfast. Not quite sure, really. But they were certainly hungry. And so they start to pick some of the ears of the corn and eat them to satisfy their hunger. Now, that in itself was perfectly legitimate. It says in Deuteronomy 23, verse 25, here's a part of the law. If you enter your neighbor's cornfield, you may pick the ears with your hands, but you must not put a sickle to his standing corn. And yet when the disciples are eating the corn and the Pharisees see them, they say, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? And their argument is based on Exodus 34, verse 21. 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day of the Sabbath you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. And so the Pharisees think we've caught them. We've caught them out. The lawbreakers. Their argument, as we've just seen, wasn't that they were eating corn from someone else's field, but they were eating corn on the Sabbath, on the day of rest. And the Pharisees' strict and binding interpretation of the law was such that even breaking off the husks that surround the corn was a form of harvesting. So they were working. They were in the fields, harvesting. You know, when you get your cob and you sort of start to peel it back, peel back the husk. Saw them doing that, perhaps. These people are like farmers. It's the Sabbath, and they're working. So they were, certainly some of them, what I would describe as legalists. And another word you could use is literalist. I remember in my first church I was in, we sang this new children's song. Well, it was new then. It wasn't If I Were a Butterfly. It was, I'd jump over the moon to tell you how much I love you, Lord. And we had this couple come up to us at the end of the service, and they said, we're not singing that again to our children. You're teaching them error. So I said to the wife, well, what's wrong with it? And they said, well, we can't jump over the moon. So I said, well, it says I'd, I apostrophe D, which really means I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. That was the correct English. But it was that sort of literalistic approach, that legalistic approach. Oh, we can't sing that. And they felt that the church was teaching the children error. So if ever that song came up, they would just sit down. I wouldn't sing it. And that was my first sort of personal experience of someone who's a literalist, literally saying, oh, you can't jump over the moon, therefore we can't sing about it. I remember thinking, it's a bit silly. But I didn't dare say that to the couple. I'd have been chucked out. Literalist. People who would interpret the law, written or oral, in its strictest sense, adhering to its exact letter of what was written or said. Not grasping the spirit of the law. What was the idea of it? Not taking it so literally, perhaps. So when they challenge Jesus, he says, well, do you remember many years ago, David and his companions, well, they were hungry. And he says, they entered the house of the Lord. They ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. They weren't allowed to eat it. David and his friends, well, they'd broken the law. But they'd not committed a sin. They were operating within the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law. You know, look, they were just hungry. It's pretty basic, isn't it? And so David helps himself to the bread and his friends, and Jesus' friends, disciples, help themselves to the corn. And then he reminds the Pharisees of the truth of the Sabbath, and he says these words, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. I remember our regional minister once saying to me, we had a situation in the church where in the Constitution, if you had a certain number of members, you had to have a certain number of leaders. I think it was something like, I'm guessing, 30 members, 5 leaders, 40 members, you needed 6 leaders, 50 members, you needed 7, something like that. And we had the quota of members, but we didn't have enough leaders because, well, we just couldn't get anyone else to volunteer. And I took it to the regional minister and I said, I'm a bit concerned that we're breaking the Constitution because we've got 3 leaders and we should have 4 or 5. And he said to me, the Constitution is made for the church, not the church, for the constitution. And I found that really helpful. He said, look, there are going to have to be occasions when you're going to have to bend things a bit. You know, if you physically can't get another leader, then you just have to work with what you got. And I thought that was a really good reminder for me. The constitution is for the church. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Now, Jesus wasn't a lawbreaker, as we'll see in a moment. Of course, the Sabbath, resting on the Sabbath, was a good thing. But the Jewish tradition had so restricted what you could and couldn't do on the Sabbath that the burden had become intolerable. It was almost impossible to meet. So Jesus cuts across the legalism. And he reminds the Pharisees that the Sabbath was a day set aside, intended for man's spiritual, mental, and physical restoration. It was there to benefit people, not to hinder them. And I guess maybe the Lord thought to himself, don't forgive me, I'm not trying to put words into the Lord's mouth, but if eating corn on the Sabbath brought some physical comfort because you were really hungry, well, maybe just eat it. Let's bring up the next part of the passage, Andrew, if you can, and we'll just turn to our lovely friends this side, and they'll just read verses 1 to 6, I think it is. 1, 2, 3, go. Thank you. Beautiful, don't you think? Oh, there we are. Well, that's true. Yeah, there were more. Yeah, you did very well. So we've only just broken into chapter 3, and already there's a plot to kill the Lord. I mean, it didn't take long, did it? Certainly in this gospel. So we find ourselves on another Sabbath day, and Jesus is once again in the synagogue, which was his custom. I love that. It says in the scriptures it was Jesus' custom to attend church every week. And I think it's such a lesson for all of us, isn't it? Nice day, maybe we should go down to the beach, or, I don't know, just have a bit of time out. And it was his custom to go and worship the Lord, and what a great example he set to all of us. And in amongst this crowd, there are some more Pharisaical legalists, and they're waiting for an opportunity to accuse Jesus. And on this occasion, they wanted to see whether he would heal on a Sabbath, rather than not heal on the Sabbath. Now, again, Jewish tradition prescribed that aid could be given to the sick on the Sabbath, only when the person's life was threatened. So if you found a situation on the Sabbath and someone was hanging off a cliff or they'd been mortally hurt or injured, you could help them, but not heal a damaged limb. No, that's not good enough. You can't do that. Only if there's an absolute emergency. And attending the meeting this day, there was a man with a shriveled hand. He was disabled, unable to work for his living. So what I did last week or the week before, I decided to spend around about 5 minutes. I woke up. I thought, I'm just going to pretend my left hand doesn't work. I wanted to see what it was like. So I just sort of let it drop like that. And I thought, right, I need to go to the loo, get dressed, have some breakfast, have a shower, just using this hand. I don't know whether you've ever tried it, but it's really, really difficult if you've only got one limb. I mean, it's even worse if you don't have any. But even just one shriveled hand that you can't use, why don't you try it over this week? Just spend a minute or so just letting one of your hands drop and just see what it's like to get through life. And you see, that's what Jesus could see because he's the Lord of compassion. He wasn't so much interested in, well, it says this and it says that, so therefore you can't. But what about the man? What about mercy? What about kindness? What about compassion? Now, the Pharisees were in no doubt that Jesus could heal. And so that wasn't the question they were asking on this particular Saturday. The question they were asking was not could he heal, but would he heal on the Sabbath? Because you're not allowed to. Well, we read that Jesus became angry. You don't often read that about the Lord. He's incensed by their attitude. It's appalling to him. They would rather a disabled man continue with his disability on the Sabbath than seeing him being released from his infirmity. What type of attitude is that? They lacked compassion. I don't know whether you ever use Matthew Henry as a commentary, but occasionally I'll drop into what he has to say, and this is what he says about this verse. The Pharisees were very unkind. I thought that was quite polite, Matthew. He says, the Pharisees were very unkind, both to the patient and the physician. Instead of interceding for a poor neighbor, they did what they could do to hinder his cure. You're not allowed to do it. For they let it be known that if Christ cured him now on the Sabbath day, they would accuse him as a Sabbath breaker. And so they were waiting and they were watching to see what would happen. Now, for those of us who've known the Lord a long time, we are very, very aware that he loves, he has compassion, he doesn't judge. If someone walked in here right now with a criminal past, he wouldn't be remotely concerned about it because he would see the person rather than maybe what they've done. I think I wrote in our report for Renew, people are welcome whatever their past or whatever their present, just welcome because the Lord will do the rest anyway. And so he's driven by love and he's driven by compassion, and he is most certainly not bound by the letter of the law, but by the freedom that the spirit of the law can bring. And so here before him, someone is in need of help, and help them, Jesus will. He gets him to stand up in front of everyone so everyone can see. It's not done behind the curtain or back door. Stretch out your hand. And somehow this disabled man just lifts his limb and stretches it out. And we read that his hand was completely restored. I mean, can you imagine the joy of it? I remember having a sort of hip replaced, and that was joyous. But that sort of titanium. But this incredible miracle, it just grew. Same size as the other one. Now he could go home. He could wash easily, he could make his breakfast, he could go to the loo or whatever he needed to do. He could go to work. His whole life is transformed in a moment. It's wonderful, isn't it? This is what the Lord does. And the contrast in attitude between the Pharisees and the Lord is pretty staggering. They said it was an unlawful act. They would have preferred that this poor man had remained disabled at least for one more day. Jesus saw something very different. He saw the scourge of infirmity and the cruelty of infirmity and how it adversely affected the sick man's whole life. He saw it. And so he says, look, surely on the Sabbath it's better to do good than to do evil. Knowing he could be healed and walking away, that would be evil. Knowing he could be healed and healing him, that's a pretty good thing to do. The disabled man is made whole in an instant, which leads the Pharisees to more drastic measures. And this is where we're going to be ending this series for now. Verse 6. Then the Pharisees went out, and they began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus, I find it really hard to comprehend. I think if I'd have been in the synagogue that Sabbath, and if I'd have known the person with the shriveled hand, and they were a friend of mine, the joy of seeing them being restored would be, I'd just be, you know, you'd be dancing all the way home, wouldn't you? It'd be wonderful. And you can just picture these other people in the background saying, we're not happy with this. Not free, he's broken the law. Now, the Herodians and the Pharisees were arch rivals. So it's quite strange that they would get together and plot. They were a political and religious faction of Hellenistic Jews. They supported the Herodian dynasty. They supported Roman rule in ancient Palestine. So their primary goal was preserving the political power of the Herod. So in all of these things with the Pharisees and the Herodians and the Sadducees and the chief priests of the law, it's very, more often than not, it's power and it's control and it's domination. And you either do it our way or we get rid of you. So in a way, perfect partners in crime with the Pharisees, because they would see Jesus not so much as a religious threat, but as a political threat. So why don't we work together to get rid of him? And so at this point, verse 6 in chapter 3, we've moved beyond just questioning the ministry of Jesus. Well, why are you doing that? And what's all this about? And you shouldn't be doing this. That has now taken a much more sinister turn. And now they're plotting his downfall. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. And so as you go through the gospel, if you want to continue during the summer months, the desire to find a reason to accuse Jesus of wrongdoing would continue until they felt they had enough evidence to have him arrested, which is further along in the gospel. And you and I know that they succeed in their plans. A false charge is made against the Lord, an arrest is made, and an awful, dreadful, false trial. And as was Roman custom, well, the way we get rid of people is, well, we'll just crucify them. And Jesus was crucified. It appeared that they succeeded. And the joy for you and I is they didn't. They thought they had. And even 3 days later, when the Lord rose from the dead, they would deny it and say it's all nonsense and you're making it all up and blah, 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 blah. And then you move forward to 2026. And a third of the world population says we follow Jesus. It's amazing, isn't it? No money, no power, no marketing ploy, but the truth revealed to those who want to receive it. So as we leave this passage and this series at this moment in time, at a rather awkward point, we remember, yes, they did plot to have the Lord removed, and in fact, they succeeded. But it wasn't the end, but the beginning. So just a final thought, and then we'll just throw out a question. I haven't thought of the question yet, so I'm hoping it comes in the next 2 minutes, or maybe one of us could come up with something. We'd just like to just discuss for 5 minutes a question, and then we'll have a worship song after that. The scripture tells us that Jesus came to fulfill the law, not break it or abolish it. But rather than just following the literal rules, you've got to do this and you've got to do that, let me just give you one example. Do you remember when a lady was caught in adultery? And the word says, the law said, if a woman or a man, I guess, is caught in adultery, found guilty, you've got to stone her to death. That is the law, whether you like it or not. And of course, in some countries, now, still happening. And remember when they brought this woman to Jesus, and hoping that he'd sort of say, yeah, well, you're absolutely right, that's what the word says, that's what the law says. And they've all got stones in their hand, ready to lob them, and the older people are standing maybe near at the front, and they should have known better, and they didn't, they knew worse. And do you remember what Jesus said? Let he who hath not sinned cast the first stone. It's an incredible moment of wisdom So he's not saying the law's wrong. He's just saying, well, I'll tell you what. If you're innocent, why don't you chuck the first stone? And then we read the stones just drop to the ground. The older ones first. Moving away, they thought, oh my goodness. This is what the law means. Of course, adultery isn't right and is damaging. Yes, both parties. Thank you, Magnus. But Jesus, in that instance, had the compassion of a woman lying at his feet who was terrified. What are you going to do? Stick with the law or show mercy? What did he do? He showed mercy. So rather than just following the literal rules, Jesus expanded the law to address the issues of the human heart. And he emphasized that the overarching goal of the law is love. Summed up as love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself, as oneself. Well, as we go into the summer months, can I encourage us to make our love for God and for one another our law? Wouldn't it be great if we can get to the end of the summer and say, you know, I look back and I moved in a way of loving other people and loving God that I'd never done before. I'm a better person for it. May we make the love of God and the love for one another our law as we continue to serve him until he takes us home to be with him. Amen.